Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Radio Boston's Political Roundtable is back again to help us dig into the most recent election news. On the agenda today are primaries, political ads, and pot. How's that for an alliterative trio? We're joined by former state representative and Democratic analyst Susan Tracy. Susan, welcome back. Exactly. And on the other side, we've got Republican analyst Jack Clancy. Jack,
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
The primaries happened last week, but I think they're still worth talking about because that's really set the stage for what is going to happen now through November. Many people, of course, were talking about the race in the 10th congressional district between Bill Keating and Jeff Perry, because it looks like Perry, who's the Republican candidate, may actually have a shot at winning in what was traditionally a Democratic district. I'm wondering if the two of you feel that Perry truly does have a shot. Do you want to start with this one, Jack?
Sure. I think when you say truly was a Democratic district, it was indeed because Delahunt was there. I think the numbers indicate, perhaps with Scott Brown's victory, 60% in that district, that it's probably more balanced than that. I think he does have a chance. I think he does have a very tough uphill climb because obviously Keating is going on the attack with Perry's personal issues, certainly regarding when he was on the police force, and it's going to make life tough for him.
Those being when he was at the Wareham Police, an officer under his command had illegally strip-searched two teenage girls, and he resigned 6 months later, although he says it wasn't related to that. But that really has been what his primary opponent went after him on.
Absolutely, and he has to defend the indefensible. I don't know how you can defend what has happened there, and he doesn't try to. I think he simply wants to change the subject whenever it's brought up. And he wants to claim that his opponent should talk about the issues. But this is going to stick with him. And I don't know how you can, as I said, explain about it to anyone who might still vote for you because of it. But he's got a problem with it.
And Susan Tracy, obviously, during the primaries, Republican voters didn't hold that against him. Do you think that Bill Keating can use that to take Keating to victory, or could Jeff Perry win this thing?
Well, obviously, it's the most competitive race in the state. I mean, the Republicans, if they're going to pick up a seat, this is probably where they're going to pick it up. It's an open seat. It's one where Scott Brown did well. So, yes. So this is the seat that's in play in Massachusetts for sure. I think Keating's remarks on election night were really telling. He came out swinging. If you listen to his election speech, he did two things. One, he reminded people about the strip search of teenage girls and did it in a way where he said, if a strip search can take place within 5 feet of your presence and you didn't know about it, what aren't you going to know about in Washington, D.C.? I thought it was a very smart way to raise the issue and frame it. And then he said, he told the Democratic leadership, look, I'll work with you, but I'm not working for you. So he made a clear distinction that he's, you know, he's a Democrat, but he's not going to do things that aren't in the best interest of his district. Thought it was a really smart election night speech.
So he knows exactly what he can use to go after Perry, and he intends to use it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Barney Frank, the congressman, had an easy win in the primaries, just as he had in his past general election races. Now he's facing a Republican named Sean Bilat, and this weekend, former President Bill Clinton will appear in Taunton to campaign for Barney Frank. Susan Tracy, what do you make of that? Is Barney Frank concerned if he's bringing in Bill Clinton?
I think Barney Frank is a smart politician who understands this is a tough election year for incumbents in particular. I think he's doing absolutely the right thing. It's a great message to the voters of his district that, hey, I don't take this for granted. I'm working hard. And quite frankly, Bill Clinton came in town for Stephen Lynch, and that worked pretty well for him. So, and remember, Barney Frank also endorsed Hillary Clinton for president. So I'm sure that President Clinton is happy to be back in town.
Jack Clancy, right now, Barney Frank has a war chest that is 10 times the size of his opponent's. Sean Bilat's. Barney has about 2.4 million. Bilat has about 228,000. With that kind of massive gap between, in terms of the dollars they have, does Bilat's have a chance?
One would think no. I think that kind of discrepancy in funding is certainly a negative. I think in the Democratic in the primaries, the Democrats turned out 30,000. The Republicans turned out 10. Clearly, he's in a district which is typically a Democrat. I think maybe why he's looking at this seriously is because Bilat may go after him on the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac mortgage collapse issues. He did release some information over the weekend regarding the One United Bank, the Maxine Waters issue, and Barney may be tied to that in some way. There's some talk that he wrote an addendum that allowed the One United Bank to indeed stay viable as a TARP viable bank when it would not have had he not written that piece of legislation. And so there's a little something there that maybe Bilott can chew on for a while.
One more primary related issue I want to raise, which is that Attorney General Martha Coakley had a little bit of a surprise last week, which is that it looked like she was going to have no opponent, but a write-in candidate named James McKenna rounded up enough signatures to appear on the November ballot for the GOP. McKenna says he was motivated to run in part by Coakley's weak performance in the U.S. Senate special election, in which, of course, she lost to Scott Brown. Do the two of you think that Coakley's loss to Scott Brown makes her vulnerable in this race, too?
I don't. I'll say right off the bat, I have two fundamentally different races. By all standards, Martha Coakley has done a great job as Attorney General. She's being judged in her role in that position. That Senate race was, you know, an individual race. It was a referendum on health care. It was a referendum on President Obama. This is running for reelection to the Attorney General. She's done a good job, and it would be a pretty sore way to run against someone because she didn't do a good job running for Senate.
I think the Republicans' view is probably, and we've used a lot of football analogies during this election season, but you can't recover the football if you're not on the field is a statement that people make. And I think Republicans say, let's get somebody out there for every seat. Let's just see what happens. Clearly, the voters are motivated. I agree. I don't think Martha Coakley's in danger here, but they want to have someone out there. And again, as we've mentioned before, Republicans running this time, in many cases, are getting name recognition, and they may or may not win, but they're getting a chance to get their names out there.
The governor's race. We're seeing these candidates out there a lot. We're seeing a lot of debates. We're seeing a lot of ads. The three leading candidates for governor, meaning incumbent Democrat Deval Patrick, Republican Charlie Baker, and independent Tim Cahill, are now all on the airways. Patrick held out until last Sunday when he finally came out with this ad.
I know that these are tough times. We've balanced four budgets now by making a combination of deep cuts and new revenue. We have, because of those choices, been able to invest at the highest level in the history of the Commonwealth in public schools, keeping our students first in the nation. We've protected your health care, and we've been able to add 60,000 new jobs. Now, our opponents would make other choices, choices that would take us back.
Susan Tracy, there's Deval Patrick, obviously making himself out to be quite a strong fiscal steward. What is the governor hoping to convey here about his handling of the economy?
First of all, I love that ad is serious. I think there are serious times, and it's a really serious message. I think what he's doing there is really smart. He's saying he's recognizing the tough times. He's empathetic that it's been difficult for all of us, but he's also said, look what we've been able to achieve in those tough times. We've been able to achieve health care, increased jobs, best education in the country. Pretty remarkable given what we've been through to be a leader through that. I think it's a great message, and I love the tone of it.
I want to note that one of the producers on Radio Boston pointed out that music in the background just had a little hint of Tom Perry's Free Falling song, which is
that was a Republican producer.
I'm sorry, Tom Petty. I think I said Tom Perry. Probably not the message you want to convey in an ad about the economy. Let's listen also to the latest spot from Charlie Baker.
Thanks to the 41 labor organizations who have endorsed our campaign. I'm grateful.
And so are the union bosses. Under Patrick and Cahill, spending increased, taxes were raised, and while jobs fled the state, they gave raises to state employees. No wonder union bosses are attacking Charlie Baker. Baker will cut 5,000 state employees, saving millions, repeal the Patrick Cahill tax increases, reform a broken pension system. Charlie Baker, because we can do better.
Jack Clancy, what do you make of Charlie Baker clumping Tim Cahill and Deval Patrick together, and is that an effective ad?
I think he feels he has to do that. He wants to draw, obviously, some of Cahill's votes. As we get closer to the election, Cahill's going to lose some votes because people want their vote to count. They're going to vote for either Baker or Patrick, depending upon who they might have to vote for. But I think it's an effective ad. But what struck me the most is that he's kind of laid the gauntlet down here. I think we have a public versus private issue going on now. And Charlie Baker and attacking Deval Patrick because of his connection with 41 labor unions is basically saying, I won't help the labor unions, and Deval Patrick will. Well, the Mass Teachers Association has 107,000 members, and a lot of the other labor unions add up to tens of thousands of people. So that's a bold step if you're willing to write that many votes off in an election like this.
Moving on to some, there's some atypical news coming up. This was related to Jon Stewart. We have a little clip here we want to play from Jon Stewart.
Tonight, I announce the rally to restore sanity. We will gather We will gather on the National Mall in Washington, D.C., a million moderate march, a clarion call for rationality.
That, of course, was The Daily Show's Jon Stewart last week. And Stephen Colbert has followed with plans for his own counter-rally, which he's calling the March to Keep Fear Alive. And, you know, obviously the rallies are in some measure a response to Glenn Beck's Lincoln Memorial Rally last month. But, you know, like most of The Daily Show material, there's always a real message behind the satire. So, Susan Tracy, you first. What is the message in this case, and does it really have any impact?
You know, I think where it does have impact is among young voters who I think a lot of times can check out on these midterm elections. I've taught freshmen in college classes before, and I find that where they get their news is really from Jon Stewart and from Stephen Colbert. So I actually think it's, while it's tongue-in-cheek and funny, I like it. I think it kind of points to, you know, there are people out there who find some of the things that have been going on, not a return to sanity, or keeping fear alive is probably a good thing. So I like that they're doing it, and I think it keeps young people engaged in politics in a good way.
I think I heard a bit of research the other day that said 38% of people in the 24 to 49% bracket said they get their news from The Daily Show.
I think that's correct,
That's very scary. I think it's an interesting twist. I don't think it's anything like Glenn Beck's rally in terms of what it'll probably put together. Beck, as you recall, had a real religious overtone.
This has a huge turnout.
Turnout, but this has a strong political overtone. It may be fun. It's very close to the election. Who knows what will happen from it, but it's scary to know that a comedy channel host could put something like this together and it would be taken
so
seriously.
Some of that other news is a little scary, too.
I agree.
Let me go back. Actually, let me mention that tomorrow night there's another debate, of course. All four candidates will be there. That includes Green Rainbow candidate Jill Stein, who was excluded from last week's radio debates. But over the weekend, Stein was the only candidate to show up at the weekend's Hemp Fest. This is the annual marijuana rally held on Boston Common. And here's Stein, who I think it's important to note is a doctor, in case anyone doesn't already know that. Here she is speaking at that rally.
We are all paying a price for a misguided ban on a plant with vast medicinal and economic benefits that we need here in Massachusetts.
So Jack Clancy, she's calling for legalizing marijuana. We already decriminalized possession of small amounts of marijuana, but she's calling for a legalization. Do you think that that statement could hurt her among people who are more centrist but who may have been considering voting for her?
I think that without equivocation, we can now say that Jill Stein has the hemp vote, without a doubt. I don't know. I think you're right. I think it will probably hurt her. We talked last time about her maybe seeming a little more toward the mainstream than some people thought. I think this is going to detract greatly from that. Of course, if you ask the average person, 30 or 40% of people would say, sure, let's legalize marijuana. But is that where you need to be on this weekend when there are so many other issues to deal with?
So at the debate tomorrow night, which I assume both of you will be watching, tell me what you're going to be looking for and what you think these candidates need to do to try to propel themselves beyond the numbers. You know, Baker and Deval mainly have been holding steady in their numbers. Cahill's been slipping. Susan, what are you going to be looking for?
You know, I think for me on the Cahill front, I think that there's been this sense of like dismissing him and kind of trying to push him out of the race. It's funny. As people know, I'm with Deval Patrick in the race, but I look at that stage and I see really three people who are elite, and they are Governor Patrick. You know, he's got a Harvard education, Harvard Law School, Charlie Baker, similar kind of pedigree, Jill Stein. And I look up and I see one person who, you know, if you're from Quincy, Boston, Revere, you know, Lowell, Lawrence, you know, pick your place. I think there's one person who's a regular person up there, and that's Charlie Baker. Tim Cahill. And I think it'll be interesting to see if any segment of this sort of Tea Party, anti-government type gravitates to him. So for me, it's whether he kind of stays in the mix or not, I find interesting. Charlie Baker, is he going to be the angry man? Is he going to be passionate or petulant, I think, are the options for him. And, you know, whether Governor Patrick can communicate that he did a good job through really difficult times and he's a strong leader who deserves to be reelected.
And Jack, what will you be looking for?
Well, I think we didn't talk about the Cahill ad, but the Cahill had an ad this weekend as well. I think what I noticed in those ads, and it relates to tomorrow night's debate, is that neither one of Cahill nor Patrick mentioned the Big Dig. You may recall they were trying to tie Baker to the Big Dig. Neither one of those ads talks about this. It may be that they found that that's not going to stick to the wall. So I wonder what happens with that tomorrow night. I think you're right about the angry young man and the outburst from Charlie Baker last week. We may see a softening of that. On the other hand, I predict that you might see more emotion out of Governor Patrick. If you go back to the Reagan, this is going way back, but Ronald Reagan's candidacy turned when he had an angry moment with a moderator with a microphone. You may remember that going way back. And some people like that, and in these times, some people may want that.
You've both just referenced the angry man. This was the Charlie Baker outburst. And, you know, every Friday on Radio Boston, we do a Week in Review. And I asked the Week in Review panelists this question, but I want to ask you, too, because Charlie Baker was shouting, and you had Tim Cahill telling him to calm down. And I asked them, do you think this was genuine outrage, or was it contrived? Was it an act because someone said to Charlie, you need to seem more passionate and emotional? Susan, do you think that was real, what we saw?
You know, it's funny. I didn't react to it as sort of outrage. I did see it as more petulant. There was just the body language, the legs stretched out. You got the feeling like, you know, this was an annoyance to him. So I didn't get the sense I'm fighting for you. I got the sense I'm annoyed that I have to do this. So, you know, that was how I read it. But, you know, I only speak for myself, obviously. So I guess it depends upon whether it's petulant or passionate.
Yeah, I think it's hard to tell as well. It seemed an odd particular subject to go that far, being angry. I think the education.
Remind us, it was always education, the guidelines, adopting the national guidelines,
right.
Which some people think eroded state guidelines.
Right. It seemed an odd area in which to be very angry about. There's so many other areas. But I don't know. I mean, you wonder often with candidates, is every step pre-programmed and planned? And perhaps it was. I don't know. But I also think he's passionate about really wanting to do something for the state in the sense of how bad the economy is and what he can do from a Republican slant.
We actually have that tape from Baker. I think it's worth hearing again. Let's just take a listen to it.
Massachusetts should be aspiring to be better than everyone, everywhere, if we're serious about competing economically and delivering for our kids. And by doing this, the state has given up its authority to own its future on this.
On that note, how can you, develop, Patrick?
And I will fight this one. I cannot believe the treasurer decided that this was not a fight worth having. This is exactly the kind of fight we should have.
Calm down, Charlie. I'm not going to calm down on this one.
This is about the future of the kids in Massachusetts.
So there you go. Well, you know, we'll be waiting to see if tomorrow night we see that same kind of reaction.
I don't think it was a John Dean moment.
Howard Dean moment.
I'm sorry, John Dean. Oh, boy, I'm really going back there. I mentioned Reagan. Howard Dean moment. Indeed, I don't think it's going to be remembered past this week in terms of whether he can handle the job or not because he's too angry.
Baker has said that he won't introduce any new taxes. What do you make of that, given how dire the state financial situation is right now and how dependent we are generally on taxes?
I think
Susan
he's
Tracy?
Going right down the Republican Party line handbook. It's a classic Republican position to be in. You know, we've seen this before. I won't raise taxes, and then every fee you could ever imagine gets raised in place of it. So, you know, whether the voters will see through it or not remains to be seen.
And Jack, if he gets elected, is that a promise he won't be able to keep?
I think we found with any level of candidacies over the past couple of years, it's hard to keep your promises that you make. And I think people do keep an eye on that. And it's a tough one to project, particularly considering we're going to lose billions in certain federal aid now, and there are going to be some serious problems with pensions and so on. It's a tough one to keep, but it's one that I think people want to hear.
Jack Clancy, our Republican analyst, thank you for being here.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
And Susan Tracy, our Democratic analyst, thank you, too, for being
thanks.
Here. When we come back, a new film surveys the damage that the Asian longhorned beetle has done in Worcester. Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.